WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's day three of the DNC. If you've been online or watching TV, you've probably been hearing messaging like this.
We go forward. That's American. And we need a leader who is for the people.
Ours is a fight for the future. Do we believe in the promise of America? And are we ready to fight for it?
What does this say about how the Harris campaign wants to reach voters? What more does the vice president have to do to win over voters and win the election? I asked Connie Mixon, professor of political science and director of the Urban Studies Program at Elmhurst University, these questions. And I asked her what she's been noticing the past couple of days.
You know, I've been really impressed with how the convention has been going. There have been, you know, some criticisms that it's been long on vibes and short on platforms, but I actually don't see that as a negative. Okay. I think vibes are a good thing. They're contagious. They build enthusiasm. They're inspirational.
Yeah.
We even heard it from the Obamas last night. Barack Obama walked out and said he's fired up.
Yeah.
Michelle Obama was talking about, hope, do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is good for the base. And I think it also speaks well to a television audience.
Yeah. Tell me more about what you're thinking of the speeches so far. Is there a general tone or messaging that you're sensing across the board here?
Well, I think, you know, the general messaging is change. Mm-hmm. And progress going forward, not looking back. President Obama said it last night in a pretty humorous way when he talked about, you know, we've all seen the movie, right? And we don't want a sequel because sequels usually aren't as good.
Right.
And so I think that's a lot of the messaging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, typically by the time a candidate reaches the stage, they've spent months working on their party platforms. And we have to remember that Vice President Harris just became the presumptive nominee.
Right.
And
she
actually
hasn't had the time.
Exactly 1 month ago today.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah, she hasn't had the time. So given all of that, Connie, how would you describe her campaign strategy right now?
I think, you know, her campaign strategy is much the same as Biden's, particularly when we're looking at policy proposals. There simply hasn't been a lot of time to do it, and she's not deviating very much from the policies that were proposed by President Biden.
Mm-hmm.
The problem for Democrats wasn't necessarily the policy. It was more the messenger. And, you know, Biden was perceived as too old and too vulnerable to win. And what seems to me is that without getting too much into the weeds of her specific policies, President Harris has really employed three framing and narratives, mm-hmm. tactics that have proved successful so far.
Yeah.
Since her first run for president in 2020, she's moderated her positions. She says she no longer supports a ban on fracking or the decriminalization decriminalization of unauthorized border crossings. Mm-hmm. She said she no longer supports a single-payer health care. And on the campaign trail, she's really touting her support of the bipartisan border security bill and her toughness as a former prosecutor. This is attractive to the never-Trump Republicans and independents. Then secondly, she's also making the case for her liberal positions by employing a philosophical conservative frame. She frames liberal social policies like support for labor unions, higher taxes on the rich, expanding social welfare, as attempts to safeguard individual freedom from government overreach. We even hear that in her theme song, Beyoncé's Freedom.
That's true.
President Obama made a lot of these same arguments last night. And then third, she's really highlighting her ties to the middle class. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen the video. She's raised by a single mom. She worked for McDonald's. I love that one. I also worked for McDonald's. And she's effectively using her own middle class social background as a contrast to the wealth that Donald Trump was born into.
Yeah, to that end, I mean, we have heard a lot of different taglines for her campaign, from "When we fight, we win" to "We're not going back."
Right.
To "This is a fight for the future." And we're hearing a lot of messaging, especially last night, around her fighting for us and, you know, not focusing on her own problems, but our problems. Right. Now, I want to listen to an example of an ad run by the Trump campaign.
Kamala Harris's radical ideas keep ending in tragedy. Harris raised money to fund the release of violent criminals like Sean Michael Tillman. Harris's liberal ideas get people killed.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
Very different tone here. How do you think her campaign strategy compares to former President Donald Trump?
You know, they say in politics that the first to define an issue or a candidate wins. And it appears that the Trump campaign has been having some trouble trying to define Vice President Harris. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of the kitchen sink approach, where they're throwing things at the wall to see what will stick. And, you know, the clip you just played tries to paint her as being weak on crime, and she's countering that as being a tough former prosecutor.
Right.
And if this week at the DNC and her speech tomorrow night, if she can effectively define herself before the Trump campaign has really gotten anything to stick, that'll be a plus for Democrats.
Define herself and also just show us where she aligns with President Biden, to your points earlier, and where she maybe doesn't align.
Right.
Right. Sort of charting her own path. It's a fine line to walk.
It's a fine line. And as vice president, your job really is to fade into the background. You don't want to ever overshadow the president. And she has been a loyal soldier to the Biden administration. And in many ways, what voters look to are party identifications as a cue for how to vote. And she doesn't deviate much from Biden, although there might be subtle differences. She's rolled out a few things on the economy. She also, you know, when we're looking at Gaza, she's been a little stronger on civilian deaths and a little harder on Israel there. But still, like the Biden administration, she supports a two-state solution.
We heard a lot of messages from the Obamas about how much she cares about people. They had these very interesting calls to action. As you mentioned earlier, you said do something. That's when we heard from Michelle. We heard yes, she can from former President Obama. Also taking the DNC stage last night was the former White House press secretary for Donald Trump, Stephanie Grisham. She started her speech by calling herself a true believer and one of Trump's closest advisors. I want to play a little bit of her speech.
He has no empathy, no morals, and no fidelity to the truth. He used to tell me, "It doesn't matter what you say, Stephanie. Say it enough and people will believe you." But it does matter. What you says matter. And what you don't say matters.
So she continued by saying that she loves her country more than her party. What did you make of her speech? It was interesting to hear about her experiences with Donald Trump himself and his family.
Yeah, you sort of got a behind the scenes look at what, you know, many of us that followed the Trump administration sort of thought was happening. Mm-hmm. And this just sort of validated many of the thoughts that we had. And I think Democrats are smart in bringing former Republicans, members of the Trump administration, yeah, to the stage.
What does that say to you, you know, seeing someone who was so close to the former president now at the Democratic National Convention?
Yeah.
Calling him a liar, calling Trump a liar and advocating for a Democrat?
Yeah, and they had the Republican mayor of Mesa, Arizona, a critical swing state, there last night as well.
Yeah.
I think Adam Kinzinger, our own Illinois former congressperson, is going to speak tomorrow night. It gives permission for independent voters, swing voters, people that might have just stayed home, folks that didn't like Trump or Biden. Their presence sends a message that, you know, it's okay to vote for Harris.
Yeah.
It also says that democracy is much more important than party labels.
Mm. Right now, it feels like there is newfound energy among some Democrats since the start of Kamala Harris's official presidential campaign. Do you have any concern, Connie, that this surge in energy and excitement is going to overshadow the fact that this is still a close race?
It's still a close race. It's going to come down to a handful of states and, you know, 10,000, 20,000 votes in some of these states. You know, we're pretty much still, unfortunately, very polarized, a 50-50 country. And yeah, the way our electoral college is set up, you know, even if Harris right now is leading in the polls nationally, but even if she wins the popular vote, that, yeah, doesn't necessarily guarantee that she ends up as president.
You literally never know.
Right.
You never know. Now, in his speech, former President Barack Obama said, quote, "The rest of the world is watching to see if we can actually pull this off."
Right.
Does that feel true to you right now?
I think it does. You know, our great experiment in democracy is certainly on the ballot. When we look at the Trump administration's past actions, when we look at things like Project 2025, mm-hmm, there are signs that we as political scientists worry about sliding into authoritarianism. And it's not as if it can't happen here. It's happened other places. We are not exempt, mm-hmm, from that.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Micah Yasin. It was mixed by Ari Mejia and edited by Meha Ahmed. Reset pairs nuance and breaking news. Now, if this sounds like what you're looking for, make sure to check out our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely